We're joined now on Zoom by food policy analyst, multiple James Beard winner, Corby Kummer. Corby is the executive director of the Food and Society Policy Program at the Aspen Institute, senior editor at the Atlantic, and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy. Hello there, Corby.
Hello there, and I can't resist saying I sent two people Marty Baron's piece about the Washington Post and the Atlantic this morning.
Beautiful.
Oh, great. Yeah, he's a great newsman. We got cut short last week, but we got him back again tomorrow, and I'm very excited about it. So, Corby, we're going to talk to you about people smuggling eggs in from Mexico, but then we discovered, lo and behold, that egg prices are coming down. So what is this about?
So egg prices are coming down because of the luck of a lack of new avian flu cases.
Great.
So for the past 3 weeks, they've come down every week, wholesale prices. And we're just lucky that there hasn't been a new outbreak of avian flu because, according to one expert in, I can't remember where, the Times or Wired, I think, one more avian flu outbreak, prices go back up again. But this story about smuggling dozens of eggs over the border from Mexico, along with cocaine. It used to be only looking for powder.
Cocaine.
Now it's eggs. And the whole idea, it's sort of like a comedy. You can bring a dozen decorated Easter eggs in at a time. They're supposed to be, the eggs are supposed to be sucked out. They're supposed to be dry inside so that they'll last. That's the tradition of decorating eggs. But the idea that inspectors are supposed to be picking up the eggs to see, are they full or are they empty? The idea is just crazy. But they were, I think, $2 a dozen wholesale as opposed to like $6 retail. So they were smuggling eggs across the border.
So what happened that the bird flu is always under control all of a sudden? Is that because so many of them were culled, the euphemism for killed, is that what happened? They eradicated the problem, essentially, or what?
I don't think there's been any eradication. I just think, as with all of these virus outbreaks, it's a question of wind, weather, virulence of the actual strain that comes down in bird feces or wherever it gets into a flock. I saw no explanation for it.
Okay, so we've spoken a lot about RFK Jr. today, and we're now going to talk about beef tallow, even though I have no idea what it is. Here is RFK Jr. talking to Sean Hannity about Steak and Shake switching to beef tallow to make their fries. Here he is.
Steak and Shake just switched out, and people are raving about these French fries. You taste them.
They're amazing. They really are.
You taste these. It's a completely different experience, and the customers are raving about it. Other companies, Steak and Shake has been great. We're very grateful for them, for RFK and the French fries. They turned me into a verb.
So wait a second. So he's now the spokesperson for Shake and Bake
and
whatever it is. Trump is now the spokesperson for Tesla. I mean, it's really – so his contention, his being the top health official, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., beef tallow is the ticket. Is it the ticket?
What he's saying is that seed oils can be bad for health, and so companies like McDonald's, which used to fry its fries in beef tallow, it was a huge deal when McDonald's stopped using beef fat to fry. You know, it's still a big thing in French restaurants to use duck fat for potatoes and duck fat fries, or duck fat potatoes Anna, which are like soaked in butter, soaked in fat. You know, they're great. Animal fat really, and I grew up with schmaltz, chicken fat. Animal fat makes potatoes taste good. It has lots of flavor. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it for flavor. It's not so good for health. And seed oils are not bad for health. So it's based on this false claim that seed oils are bad for health, which health authorities are really angered by. That's why beef tallow, I think it would be any animal fat RFK would be happy with, for this ridiculous war on seed fats.
What are seed oils?
Oh, seed oil, you know, like canola, rapeseed, all of these things we don't think of because they're big agricultural crops related to mustards and brassicas, which are, you know, broccoli and kale and other plants, and you crush the seeds for fat. One of the main reasons that they became in such wide use is that in the 80s and 90s, the Philippines and various tropical climates horribly sawed down rainforests to grow crops for to be pressed into seed oils, and the price came way down globally. And so large companies started substituting seed oils in for everything because it was the cheapest fat available. But most nutrition authorities say there's nothing wrong with it.
Before you go away, why did McDonald's dump beef tallow?
Wasn't it cholesterol? Heart disease.
It was cholesterol, yeah. And protests and concerns about health and cholesterol.
Yeah, the American Medical Association, I think, is on the side of those oils, not on the side of beef tallow, right?
No, not in the heart people, whatever it's called,
the American Heart Association.
Heart Association, too.
Yep.
We in the business call it heart.
Heart, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So we've been talking a lot about DOGE in recent days as they kind of slash their way through the federal government. What impacts are USDA cuts having that we know about?
So food inspections and ports, a terrific article in Wired about, you know, not just the trained dogs, but the trained people who have graduate degrees, who spent their entire professional training learning how to look for invasive plants and invasive pests, insects that could decimate huge industrial crops grown by Trump supporters. So the idea that the DOGE has decimated the staff of inspectors, causing weeks-long delays of shipping containers at huge ports like San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Miami, because the staff isn't there. The containers are supposed to be emptied and traveling someplace else, so it's gumming up the global shipping industry. And there are going to be not only rotted cargo inside these containers waiting to be inspected, but the inspectors, there aren't enough of them. And one USDA official, not for quotation, said it's been chaos to try to field enough inspectors to keep up at all with the shipments of food coming into this country.
Well, I don't even know where I read this. Maybe it was the same story. There is one person, one employee, he's a former employee now, thanks to DOGE, in Florida, who has a dog that can sniff out, it's the only dog that can sniff out something I'd never heard of, the giant African land snail.
Yeah.
And it does exactly what you said. It does something horrible within these invasive species, which can destroy the crops of farms. And there's no other dog in Florida and no other dog owner that does it. And so while you read it and you say, well, you know, one, do we really need this guy? The answer is, yeah, we really do need this guy, but it's hard to, you know, tell a million stories all at once, you know?
But they're the ones that make it vivid. Like the only global officials who can track Marburg disease, who were uniformly cut, 70 of them across the globe. Marburg is deadlier than Ebola. We just don't know it as well. They were all fired and some of them were reinstated. But these chainsaw firings, as they're called, are going to have disastrous repercussions, including on the economy, not just our physical health, economic health.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's a DOGE thing or it's just a freeze in funding per executive order from Trump, but was also reading a story about these small farms that were producing local produce that was going to two constituencies, low-income communities and schools in low-income communities. What are you holding up a picture of? Who's that?
I'm holding up a full-page picture in the New York Times of a guy named Tom McDougall who started a food hub that would buy from hundreds of farmers.
Oh.
Often using this USDA money that was supposed to strengthen local farmers and local economies, and he would distribute it to schools. He would get big contracts from schools, from large feeding programs, also some retail. And he's one of my Food Leaders Fellows from my first cohort, Food and Society at the Aspen Institute's Food Leaders Fellows. Fabulous guy, the best soul and heart of anybody, and we've got a lot of them in our cohorts. But he's quoted in the piece as saying, this is a choice of what kind of local economies does the government want to employ, encourage. What he's not saying is the $2 to $3 million of dollars that I was going to get through these local food funds released by the USDA could decimate my business that I built for years to try to help local farmers, especially farms owned by people of color.
So, Corby Cummer, we've talked to you a before about RFK Jr.'s other idea. He calls a lot of things that people eat poison, and that includes, you know, processed foods and sugary foods. And so he wants to take away some of these foods from SNAP benefits. You'd think that's a bad idea. Tell us about this and what cutting out those foods could mean.
Okay, so none of us wants to see people drink soda or buy lots of soda.
Right.
That's fact number one. Fact number two, which we can never forget, is that WIC, women, infants, and children, along with SNAP, the country's biggest, and school food, the country's biggest feeding programs, does have requirements, doesn't allow sugary beverages, has a whole series of nutritional requirements. It's hugely effective in all kinds of populations. So that's really good. And many, many nutrition people have called for similar restrictions on SNAP, food stamps. But many advocates say, look at the market basket. The people who use SNAP dollars buy the same amount of soda. A very good piece in Axios, annoyingly told in bullet form, but that's the way Axios
is. I love the bullets.
Okay. I mean, okay, they do it for Jim. Jim's favorite.
Really, short attention span. Yes.
Yeah, it's not actually shorter. It's just stop and go. But it was pointing out that many people who get SNAP want to use it in dollar stores and convenience stores and corner stores. These stores are not equipped to be able to say, sorry, you can't buy this kind of food, because it requires complicated, I think, machines at the scanners. So Walmart, which gets a very important part of its grocery revenue from SNAP recipients, they can make adjustments based on new restrictions to SNAP, but these small places can't. And this article points out, you know, food deserts, many SNAP recipients have to go hours to get to and from a supermarket that sells fresh food. This effectively means they're not going to be able to use their SNAP coupons if these new restrictions go into effect.
But you know what this is an example of? You cited in passing that research shows that people who are buying food with SNAP benefits buy the same portion of unhealthy things, including sugary drinks, as those of us who don't buy our food with SNAP. It's another example of the smartest, most cynical politicians solving a problem that doesn't exist. I mean, it's sort of like the trans athlete thing. How many trans athletes are there in Maine? Two. And six. We the Great Globe story the other day about six agencies.
Yeah, six federal agencies.
Here, there's not a problem with SNAP. Even if you believe in the notion that the government, when it gives out money, should be telling somebody, which I don't think you do either, what they should buy and not buy, they're not buying the wrong thing. So why spend a minute, because it sells with taxpayers, that we're restricting poor people who you don't like in the era of Donald Trump? I mean, it's just, it's really insane. Okay, we're talking to Corby Comer, who doesn't like the bullets. The reason I like the bullets is you know what the important stuff is right away. You're like a famous writer and editor and reader.
Yeah,
but for those of us who are not famous at any of those things, mm-hmm. you know where to go. You look at the bullets, you take out what matters, and you go home. That's my attitude.
It's St. Patrick's Day.
Are we done with that?
Oh, sorry.
I guess we are. Go ahead.
No,
I'm done with it.
Would you like to add anything about bullets?
No, it's facts of AI. You okay. Feed a story of AI. Please do this in outline form.
Okay. Now, it's St. Patrick's Day, so what do you think? What's the deal on Irish food?
I love Irish food.
Like what?
I always say that Irish and Italian are the best foods in Europe.
Really?
Irish?
Best food. Yeah, Irish.
Like
Irish
what?
Like
lamb stew.
Dairy products in the entire world, the entire globe. The best milk, the best butter, the best cream. It's all to be found in Ireland. You know, it rains all the time. Green is the green milk. That means fabulous milk and dairy products. Wonderful fresh vegetables with lots of flavor. And I went, you know, 40 minutes each way to a friend who has an annual St. Patrick's Day reception. It was all toddlers.
God, toddlers.
We'll get to that
Saturday. No, it was great. But it was corned beef and cabbage. And that cabbage, you know, made with corned beef tallow. It was flavored with the beef fat from the stewing broth. It was fantastic. Two kinds of Irish soda bread. Irish soda bread and Irish brown bread, some of the best bread on the planet. Oh. I love Irish
wow.
bread.
Wow. Sort of surprised. There you go.
By the way, didn't I read this morning, though, it's St. Patrick's Day? I know this is not the topic that we're discussing with Corby. Corned beef and cabbage is not a thing you eat in Ireland itself. No. On course. So that's an American kind of thing?
Yeah, it's an American thing. And I can't remember where it became popular. But corning beef is a very old, hundreds of years before the big famine migration here. Because it was a way of preserving meat without refrigeration.
What's the difference? They usually have bacon and cabbage, according to the story from tastingtable.com.
What is bacon? Is bacon bacon?
Bacon? Like
no,
bacon.
Is it mean bacon?
Yeah,
or
bacon.
No, it
yeah.
isn't what we think of as smoked. It's unsmoked bacon.
Okay.
Oh. So what's the difference between corning beef and smoking beef? I was talking to this guy at Whole Foods the other day about Schwartz's in Montreal, which was the best corned beef I ever had in my life. That's smoked meat. What's the difference between smoked meat and corning of meat?
Corning beef salts it and puts various herbs on it, but it's more like a brine. And by drawing out the juices and making it drier, also while adding these spice and sour flavors, it keeps longer because there's less moisture that can oxidize and go bad. But it doesn't use smoke to flavor it.
Wow, you know everything, Corby.
Can I make a pitch also, since since RFK is shilling for, what's it called, Shake and Bake? What's mm-hmm. the name of the place?
Shake and Steaks.
Shake and Steak,
Steaks
right?
and Shakes.
And what's his face? Trump is shilling for Tesla.
Yeah.
Let me shill for Costco, not just because of their stance on DEI, how they treat their employees. If you are among those who believe that it is very hard, with a couple of exceptions, Mamala's and some others, to get a good corned beef or pastrami sandwich in Boston, at Costco, they sell from the Carnegie Delicatessen in New York City, air, what is it called when you sap the air out of the thing? What is
air fryer?
No, it's
vacuum
like
packed.
Vacuum packed little things of corned beef
hold
and pastrami,
on.
And it's fabulous.
But there's two different kinds of corned beef, right, Corby? There's red corned beef and gray corned beef, and I think that's what's hard
Nobody
to find.
Nobody sells gray in a store.
Oh, I think it's hard, but that's what goes in the original corned beef that, you know, if you're Irish, it's not the red corned beef you get usually around here.
Okay.
Saltpeter and nitrates, that's what makes the red. We don't like them.
Okay. We're going to talk for the final minutes here to celebrate, for two reasons, Dragon Pizza. And for context, people are going to say, I've heard of Dragon Pizza.
Yeah, my daughter worked there.
Well, that's not why they've heard of it, by
and
the way.
And she's also still works there.
That's the reason.
Okay. She still works there sometimes.
Here is the reason they've heard of it, is because there was this contretemps.
Great pizza.
One of Marjorie's favorite words.
Great drinks.
Between the Barstool Sports owner and founder, David
Great
Portnoy.
Great staff.
He goes at it with Charlie Redd from Davis Square's Dragon Pizza, because he rates pieces at bars. This is back in 2023. First Charlie Redd, and then Portnoy.
Let me be a little clearer. Move on. Don't stand in front of my business.
Let me be clear.
Let me be clear. Get the out of my business. Everything since I got in this business that you represent is an embarrassment.
Like
to
what?
Business.
Like raising $50 million for small
everything.
Business?
Everything.
Name it.
Everything.
You haven't named one thing.
I make pizza. It's great.
It sucks,
You're
actually.
You're a f***ing joke.
So the latest from Charlie Redd, who's one of my heroes now, he puts out a notice on Friday. To all our guests with children, anyone who's visited our restaurant knows we're a pizza shop that loves kids. Sadly, we had to demand a group of negligent parents Friday to take their families home because they're disrespecting our dining room, our guests, and our team. Our restaurant, or any restaurant, is not a place for unsupervised children to play. It is here to share dining experiences. To which I say, hear, hear, Charlie Redd. Why are you smiling like that?
Because he has a way with words. He's terrific. He told the Globe Reporter, Pi Day, whatever that is, St. Patrick's Day weekend and a Friday, basically the Bermuda Triangle for a pizza shop.
I love that. That's great.
Wait a second. You don't know what Pi Day is?
Is it, to celebrate the mathematical?
Yes. Form? And in places like I bought a piece.
As far out as you can.
I bought a piece of chocolate something pie at Flower. Do you know how much it cost? $3.14. For Pi Day on Friday.
I get it.
You got it now?
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
I vaguely recall that from seventh grade.
What are you
I think.
Talking about? And you know what a lot of restaurants do? Since we're on the topic. If you go further with 3.14, I think is it 1.6 after that? Whatever it is. The further you can go, the deeper your discount in the food item. What do you think of that? Is that exciting?
I only could get to the 3 point, and then I forget the rest.
Yeah. This is great for supervised kids, not unsupervised.
Well, he's talking about how in this piece, it's not the kids' fault, because the parents were paying any attention to the kids, and they were racing around like little lunatics. But Dragon Pizza at Davis Square, great
pizza. It's great. So before we leave, actually, I don't know if we've ever discussed this with you. Where are you on the whole issue of bringing children to any kind of restaurant? Well, first of all, pizza joint, it's fine. A regular restaurant, should there be a time after which you shouldn't be allowed to bring a kid to a restaurant, a little kid, even if you, quote, supervise them well, Corby Comer?
I'm a new grandfather, so my worldview has changed about crying children on airplanes and in restaurants.
Oh, there you go.
Now, fully on the parent's side.
No, you're not. Are you really?
Never been in my life. So, you know, I think that the hour matters a great deal. There are a couple of restaurants I know of. In fact, a great pizza joint that essentially from 5 to 7, it's children's hour. And because there's parents there with children, the entire staff knows to wait for them. And so if it's certain hours, I think it's okay as long as the parents keep them under control. And the parents should be trying to keep them under control. On the other hand, last night, friends invited us to a restaurant that every Sunday night has quiet night, no music, and greater spacing between the tables. I think I might maybe quite higher prices.
Where?
It was just great. 4 of us. This is in Washington, D.C.
Oh.
And I thought, I'll go any place that's starting to institute quiet nights.
Me too.
Fabulous idea.
I would like that. Spaces between the tables and no noise. Some of the restaurants are so noisy.
You love the quiet car on the
Amtrak. I love the quiet car on the train.
Best place in the world to work.
Yeah, but you told us that a lot of restaurants like all the noise because it makes them feel like they're more hip and happening kind of deal.
Oh, it's not just that. It gets people out sooner so that they can make more money. They can turn
Is
the table.
Is that true?
You can't stand it.
Absolutely, it's true.
Shouting across the table.
You know
that some of the ceilings, we've had this discussion before, some of the ceilings reflect sound to make it even more dramatic and more intrusive than it actually is there.
So. But there are so many good ways a sound person can install padding on those ceilings, under the tables, under chairs. There are many ways to mitigate sound, but very few restaurant owners are motivated to mitigate sound.
On that note.
Okay. So how long did you stay at the place with no noise? Were you there for 4 hours or what did you do?
Two hours.
2 hours. That's okay.
Great.
That's reasonable.
That's great
fabulous. But you're right. You might not last 2 hours in a really noisy place, right?
Maybe you would.
Maybe you would.
So
maybe
the food's
you would.
Good. Corby, it's good
Thank
to see you.
Thank you, Corby Comer.
And you.
Bye.
We've been speaking with Corby Comer, Executive Director of the Food and Society Policy Program at the Aspen Institute, a senior editor at The Atlantic, and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy. Corby, thank you very much. Up next.